Most people don't know how many financial accounts they have or their net worth. And when you're not paying attention, you're leaving money on the table. The solution is Monarch, an all-in-one personal finance tool that brings your entire financial life together in one clean interface on your laptop or phone. In just minutes, link all your accounts for a complete picture of your financial health. You'll never need a spreadsheet again. Get 50% off your first year at monarch.com with code WEALTH. That's monarch.com, promo code WEALTH.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early. Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is continuing coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Whenever you're ready, Mr. Lally.
Thank you. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Could you please state your name and spell your last name?
It's Sean Good, G-O-O-D-E.
And how are you employed, sir?
At the Canton Police Department.
And how long have you been a member of the Canton Police?
17 years.
And what rank or assignment do you currently have with the Canton
Police? Midnight Sergeant and 2 days patrol traffic.
Now, how long have you held the rank of sergeant with the Canton Police?
Coming up on 3 years.
Now, with reference to your rank and assignment as a sergeant with sort of the overnight shift, and when does that shift run from?
So it's midnight to 8. The sergeants, the oncoming sergeant usually comes in around 11 o'clock at night.
And in general terms, if you could describe to the jury, what sort of are your duties and responsibilities as a sergeant on the overnight shift?
So I'm in charge of the patrolmen that are on that work under me. There's four of us on the midnight, plus myself, so five total. Four on the road, one inside.
Turning your attention to the evening of January 28th, 2022, into the morning of January 29th, 2022. Were you working on that occasion?
Yes, I was.
Similar capacity as you just described?
Yes.
And so the time as far as when you arrived at the Canton Police Station would be similar to what you just described as well.
Yes.
Now, when you arrived, if you recall, who was sort of working with you or under you on that particular shift?
So that evening's midnight shift, it was myself, Officer Pasquarelli, Officer Mullaney, Officer Sarif, and Officer Dever.
And as far, in addition to, let me ask it this way. So when you're performing those duties in the Canton Police Station, where are you sort of physically situated within the Canton Police Department?
We're inside the dispatch room. That's where you handle all the calls, 911 calls, business lines, stuff like that. So anybody walks in the lobby, you're right there.
And so would that also be sort of part of your duties and responsibilities in regard to being the supervising sergeant for the shift?
That evening, yes, I was inside.
Now, with reference to 911 calls and dispatch, what, if any, training have you received in regard to those?
Everybody in the Canton Police Department, we do not have civilian dispatchers like other larger departments. So every officer that works patrol has to be certified on the PSAP station, which is the 911 dispatch console. And then once you're certified, you're able to answer all 911 calls.
And what, generally speaking, does that certification process entail?
It's learning the software, learning how to know the difference between a cell phone and a landline, being able to look up if a 911 call comes in on a cell phone. We have three different monitors, and you'll see that one of the monitors will be a map, and it'll just ping, and you'll see that cell phone. And a lot of the time, because of the location of the town of Canton, we do get state police 911 calls that are on the highway. So you have to be able to differentiate which call it is. It is actually us, or is it state police? Is it Randolph? Stuff like that. So you have to be able to read a map. It's not very hard, but it's that.
Now, beyond that, now, when people are calling into 911, they're typically calling in regard to an emergency, correct?
Yes.
What, if any, training do you receive in that certification process in regard to sort of demeanor or how to handle people on the line?
Obviously, if someone's calling in an emergency, they're probably going to be nervous. You want to just try to stay as calm as possible, try to relate to them, not make them any more upset than they already are, and try to get the first thing out of the is location. Where are they?
Now, with respect to calls that come into 911, what, if any, difference as far as directing the call is there between something that's sort of a medical call versus, say, a law enforcement police type call?
So any call that comes in through 911, we determine if it's police, fire, medical. If it's police, obviously, we would handle it. But if it's fire, medical, we send it to Holbrook, which is the regional dispatch for Canton Fire. So it's literally just click the button. It says fire right on the screen. That call automatically gets connected to a regional dispatcher in Holbrook, who then determines what they need, whether it be ambulance, fire, stuff like that.
Now, reference to this particular shift on this particular day, January 28th and 29th, at some point during your shift, what kind of thing did you observe about sort of the weather outside?
When we came in, it was just very light flurries. There was nothing sticking to the ground, anything like that. We were all pretty prepared that we knew that there was a storm coming at some point during the night.
And through your work with the Canton Police Department, you familiar with an individual by the name of Ryan Hicks?
Yes.
And what, if any, relationship does he have with, what, if anything, does he do for work with you?
He works for the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. It's a federal agency.
And what, if any, relationship does he have with your department at the Canton Police Department?
He has a satellite office in our department. He has his own scan card. You know, he doesn't have to check in with myself or anybody, but he works out of our station.
And is he the only agent, federal agent with the ATF that has space or anything at your police station?
No, I believe there's actually, could be U.S. Customs, two of them, other agents that work at the station as well.
Do they have sort of similar relationships as far as?
Yes, yeah. They have access to the police department. If Brian, Agent Higgins has worked on certain calls for helped us out, whether it be a firearm case, stuff like that.
Now, on that evening of the 28th, and specifically the early morning of January 29th, what, if anything, do you recall as far as seeing Brian Higgins around the Canton Police Station?
I remember at one point during the evening, he came in. I don't remember if he came into the dispatch or if I just saw him on one of the numerous monitors we have in dispatch. I can't leave that room because I'm the only one in the building on midnight. So, but we never talked or anything like that. Didn't think anything of it. It's not uncommon.
And do you recall around what time that occurred?
I believe it was probably 1:30. Again, I wasn't looking at a clock to see. But
now, with respect to the parking lot area of the Canton Police Station, when it comes to any sort of substantial amount of snow, what if anything, do you do with regard to the vehicles in the parking lot in reference to that kind of weather?
We try to move all the cars that we're not using. So would that be on a midnight shift? It's any of our unmarked detectives' cars, any of the patrol vehicles that aren't being used. We try to help out the DPW, which is the Department of Public Works, as best as possible when they try to plow our station. Because if not, all it ends up being is just one trail through the parking lot, and it's kind of a nightmare. So with the help of the other patrolmen, if we can get all the keys, sometimes they're not easily located, we try to move the cars to the outer edge of the parking lot so that TPW can make a good pass, and then we'll move them back over.
With regard to the vehicles in the parking lot, beyond sort of personal vehicles and the marked units belonging to the Canton Police, with regard to some of those other agents like Mr. Higgins that you talked about, what, if any, vehicles would they have within that parking area?
He had federal cars there that he used on cases, and I believe he had two. They'd be, I guess, his cruisers. They were Dodge pickups.
And then with regard to those vehicles, in regard to snow removal, what, if anything, was typically done with regard to that?
They were parked to the outer edge, so we don't have access to them. At least I didn't have access to them.
Now, working that sort of 911 dispatch area desk, at some point, just before 5 a.m., what, if any, calls did you receive around that time?
I received a phone call from a woman generally asking if we had locked up or transported a male potty that evening. It's not uncommon that people call and say, hey, did you lock up so-and-so or did you stop anybody? She said some version of he was out with friends, he didn't come home tonight, and his girlfriend's worried about him.
At the time that you received that call, did you know who that person was on the other end?
No.
And fair to say at some point later, you had responded to Fairview Road, is that correct?
Yes.
And the person who had called just before 5 a.m., did you have occasion to speak with them when you were on scene on Fairview?
I did.
Who did you identify that first call to come in from?
First call was Miss Roberts.
That would be Carrie Roberts, is that
yes.
correct? Yes. Honor Mayor Proko?
Yes.
So I'm showing you this. Do you recognize that?
Yes.
What do you recognize that to be?
That would be the 911 call from our station.
And that would be specifically from Ms. Roberts, is that correct?
Yes.
I'm going to introduce the minutes and that's it.
No objection.
Okay. This will be exhibit 35.
Your Honor, with court's permission, I would ask to publish that call to the jury at this point.
Okay. Hold on 1 second, please. What number? Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you. I thought that's what you said. All right. Go ahead.
Okay.
lady.
Well, thank you.
All right, no problem. Good luck.
Okay.
See ya.
You. Bye-bye.
Now, Sergeant Goodwill, what was played in there, is that a fair and accurate portrayal of the 911 call that you had with Kerry Roberts around 5 a.m.? Now, turning your attention to about an hour forward, approximately 6 a.m. on the 29th, what, if any, other phone calls did you receive, bless you, in regard to the same sort of parts?
At 6:04 a.m. on the 911 dispatch console, I received a call from a woman at 34 Fairview.
Now, in those intervening sort of hour or so, as you were stating on the 911 call, no one sort of physically came into the Camden police station and reported anything in regard to this, correct?
No.
And again, the party that you spoke to on the phone at approximately 6:04 a.m., did you know that person at that time?
No.
And again, you responded later on or shortly thereafter to Fairview and spoke with a number of different people, correct?
Correct.
From those conversations on scene, you now know who placed that 911 call at approximately 6:04 a.m.?
Yes.
And who is that person?
That'd be Miss McCabe.
And that would be Jennifer McCabe, is that correct?
Yes.
Now, with regard to, you talked about the weather when you first arrived to your ship. Around 6 a.m., what, if anything, had changed between the weather when you arrived and around 6 a.m.?
It was snowing heavily.
Now, may I approach again?
Yes.
So, when you went over this, do you recognize that?
Yes.
And what do you recognize that to be?
That'd be the 911 call from Mrs. McCabe.
I will seek to introduce and admit as the next exhibit.
No objection.
Okay.
And, Your Honor, with the court's permission, I would ask to publish Exhibit 36 to the jury now as well.
Okay.
Okay, do they not do CPR? Do they want to attempt to do?
Yes, can you guys do CPR? No, I guess he's gone.
doing so?
I think he's halfway.
Okay. If I come in, the police coming all the way. If everyone's assigning CPR, then I can't. I'll hang up with you, and if anything changes, you can give us a call back. Where are you guys upset?
I'm there. I know. I'm on the phone with the interviewers. I know. No, Kelly, you gotta get off the plane. Kelly, you gotta get off the hill.
Do you know if there's any alcohol or drugs involved?
If I could ask you just to back that up about 10 or 15 seconds or so, once the siren outside calms down.
We're fine.
Okay, bleeding from the face. All right.
Yeah.
Now take the full blood if there is any. Okay, one of the is doing CPR? All right, if you want CPR, just let me give us a call back. We don't respond, right? But we're on the way.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. And so, upon receiving that 911 call just after approximately 6:04 a.m., what, if anything, did you do with regard to dispatching?
So once it was connected to Holbrook, you could hear me. I ended up dispatching my own officers, my downtown cruisers to 34th Fairview, and then I had one other cruiser come back to the station so I could get down there.
And, so you yourself respond down there, is that correct?
Yes.
And about how much time elapsed from the time that you sort of transferred to Holbrook from the medical situation to the time that you travel down to Fairview Road?
I would guess it had to be less than 5 minutes.
And in addition to the patrol cars and yourself, who, if anyone else, did you notify in relation to that call when you...
So I phoned Lieutenant Gallagher and Detective Sergeant Lank.
Why then?
Just policy, the seriousness of the call. Lieutenant Gallagher was the off-going lieutenant the night prior, the shift prior, so that's what you usually do. And Detective Sergeant Lank is in charge of the detectives.
Now, when you left Canton Police Station to respond to Fairview, who, if anyone, assumed your role as far as manning the dispatch area in the 911?
That'd be Officer Dever.
And, you know, may I approach?
Yes.
Dever. Sorry.
And for Madam Court Reporter, if you haven't already, I'm sorry, could you just spell Officer Dever's last name if you know?
Yes, it's going to be Dever.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to show you what's been previously marked as Exhibit 14. Okay. Do you recognize that, sir?
Yes, I do.
And what do you recognize that to be?
That would be our roll call log, press log.
And as far as that particular log is concerned, is there any indication on there who sort of created that log?
Yes, that'd be Officer Dever.
And these are logs that you typically create when you're working that particular position as far as the dispatch desk, correct?
Yes, it's pretty much a running journal for our department.
And sort of how is that information gleaned and how is that sort of transmitted into that log?
It's as accurate as the officer that actually enters the information. So if it was busy in there and she's by herself, you're taking information down, you're writing it, then you have to physically enter it into a computer. So there would be a delay in time.
Thank you, sir. May I approach just to retrieve now?
Sure.
Yes.
Thank you. Now, Sergeant Good, with respect to your response at Police Station 234 Fairview Road, what was sort of the path of travel that you took?
So I pulled out of the police station at 1492 Washington Street, taking a right onto Washington, heading south.
And then where did you go from there?
And then I took a right onto Chapman Street. And then it would be your third right on Fairview.
And coming down Fairview, what, if anything, did you note as far as sort of the elevation of the roadway as you come from the Chapman side down to where 34 is?
Coming from Chapman, you're heading downhill towards the end of Fairview that meets Cedar Crest.
And so where is 34 in relation to sort of Cedar Crest?
It's the second house on the left before you reach the intersection of Cedar Crest at Fairview.
And as you're approaching, or as you're in route between the police department and Fairview Road, what, if anything, did you observe as far as road conditions, visibility, things like that?
It was terrible. Heavy snow, wind, visibility was awful.
And when you arrive on scene, what is sort of the first thing that you observe upon your arrival?
As I was coming down the hill, visibility was pretty bad. Obviously, I noticed the Canton Fire engine. Ambulance was already on scene. Both my two officers, cruisers, were also on scene.
Now, as far as the particular cruiser that you were in on that day, is there sort of a particular cruiser that is reserved for sort of the sergeant or lieutenant who's in charge of the...
Yes. So 682 is the primary patrol supervisor vehicle.
And that would sort of shift from shift to shift as far as wherever that particular sergeant is?
Yeah, he would take the same one. 682 is it's labeled on the side of the doors, patrol supervisor.
And so is that the vehicle or that the cruiser that you took to go from the police station to Fairview that morning?
Yes, I did.
And with regard to that cruiser and sort of other cruisers within the Canton Police Department, what, if any, recording system is available on those cruisers?
All marked units have it's called a watch guard camera system. It has front video camera, and then it also has in the passenger back seat has a camera there as well. They should be working audio in the back seat, they're activated by, if you flip the lights on, the blue lights, it'll automatically click. You don't have to press record. The cruiser automatically starts recording. If you got in a car accident, the camera would start recording. Any kind of impact, the camera starts recording. It actually ends up being passively recording, even when it's not on.
Now you talked a little bit about the audio as far as the back of the cruiser, but as far as from the camera in the front of the cruiser, where is the audio recording in regard to that, if at all?
It would be on the mic. There's a mic stand that sits in a charger. It looks like almost a beeper. Should be there.
And so that's located with inside the cruiser, correct?
Yes.
May I approach the witness, Sean?
Yes.
So I'm showing you a flash out. Do you recognize that?
Yes.
And what do you recognize that?
That is the flash driver for the Canton Cruiser 682 streaming.
General Conwell, seek to introduce in the minutes of the next exhibit.
Exhibit 41.
All right, why don't we break now for lunch, Mr. Lally?
Thank you.
Chris, you close your envelopes, leaving them on your chairs, or follow me. All right, here we go.
So, Mr. Lally, you'll have Lieutenant Ray here in case we can get to him.
Yes, Your Honor. And just with reference, I do have a number of other witnesses who I had anticipated having this afternoon. Am I free to release anybody who's not Lieutenant Ray or Sergeant Lank?
So I think we'll have those two. We'll finish. You can step down, sir. Nope.
Okay.
So we'll finish with Sergeant Good, and then you've got Lieutenant Ray.
Yes.
And that'll probably get us till...
I think that'll get us sufficiently through the day. I don't want to release anybody unless the court...
Well, that...
I really don't think we're going to get to anyone else.
Okay, and then we'll do the voir dire. Correct. All right, so you can go ahead and release the civilian witnesses.
Okay, thank you.
Right, thank you.
All rise for the court, please.
You are muted.
Sir, I'll mind you're still under oath.
Okay. All right, Mr. Lally, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. So, Sergeant, resuming with just been marked as Exhibit 41. That's the cruiser camera video from your cruiser 682 that you were driving that day. Is that correct?
Yes.
And, Ms. Gilman, if you could, with the court's permission, I'd like to publish some of that video.
Okay.
Ms. Gilman, if you could start from the beginning through about 4 minutes and 30 seconds. Can you pause it just 1 second? Sergeant, if you could, as the video is playing along, if you could, just alert the jury to the portion of the video where you observe yourself sort of pulling on to Fairview Road.
Yes.
And Ms. Gilman, if you could, when the sergeant does that, if you could just pause it at that. Thank you.
All right, we're coming up to Fairview right now. That's Spring, then next one up. That's Fairview right there on the right.
Positive just then. Sergeant Good, if I could take you back just to the right that you took just before that. What street are you on right now?
That's Chapman Street.
And was that Washington Street that you would turn to get onto Chapman?
Correct.
Can I ask you, when you're turning from Washington Street onto Chapman, are there any sort of businesses or sort of landmarks on your right or your left as you're making that turn?
So on the right-hand side, as you're turning onto Chapman, that's going to be Cassie's Corner Store. And on the left at the intersection is, used to be called Temple Beth Abraham. I believe it's Temple... Binbar something. I don't know the actual name. But
so there's a temple on your left and Cassie's on your right?
Correct.
Okay, so at this point in the video here is about when you're about to turn on to Fairview.
Yes.
You come in as you could. Thank you. May I approach the witness, Ron?
Yes.
It was repelled.
Oh, so, sir, sorry, there's a point here. If I could, Sergeant, just ask you to, within this sort of still frame up here on the screen, do you recognize people that are depicted within this still frame of this video?
Yes.
And if, to whatever extent you do recognize people, if you could, using the laser pointer, draw the jury's attention to whom you recognize.
All right. That's going to be myself. Right there is going to be Firefighter McLaughlin. That's going to be Miss Reed. And if you played it another second, I believe that's going to be Miss McCabe, or if not, Miss Roberts.
Ms. Gilman, if you could. Ms. Gilman. The gentleman you see sort of behind you in the frame, Sergeant, do you recognize who that is?
Yes, that's Officer Sarif.
My apologies, Ms. Gilman. You can run. You can now take that down. Thank you very much. And so, Sergeant, you arrive on scene in that area. First of all, what's contained in that video, is that a fair and accurate portrayal of what you observed as far as the weather conditions outside that day?
Yes.
And when you arrive on scene, who, if anyone, is it that you speak to first?
Initially, I walked up to Officer Sarif. I said probably some version of what's going on. Officer O'Keefe was already in the ambulance, and then I just began to try to talk to anybody.
And so the ambulance is still on scene when you arrive, is that correct?
Yes.
Officer O'Keefe is in the back of the ambulance, is that correct?
Yes.
And at some point when you're speaking with Officer Sarif, does he direct your attention to where Officer O'Keefe was prior to being placed in the ambulance?
Yes.
Where did he direct your attention?
If you're looking at the house, it'd be left-hand side, slightly in, probably right in front of the flagpole.
And about how far off of the roadway would you estimate that was?
I would say 8 to 10 feet off the curb.
Now, speaking of the people, without reference to necessarily what was said to you, following your conversation with Officer Sarif, who, if anyone, did you speak to next?
I believe the first person I could really get a statement from was Ms. McCabe.
And when you say first person you could really get a statement from, what do you mean by that?
It was a chaotic scene. People just kind of walking in and out. And so Ms. McCabe was the first one that was able to give me a good statement of how they ended up here.
Following your conversation with Ms. McCabe, who, if anyone, did you speak to next?
Next was Ms. Reed.
And just to be clear, when we speak about Ms. Reed, do you see her in the courtroom today?
I do.
Identify as to where she's seated or an article of clothing she's wearing.
She's sitting between Mr. Jackson and Mr. Yannetti.
I'll just ask the record to reflect identification.
Okay.
Now, when you're on scene and you're speaking to these individuals, what if any impact did the weather have as far as your ability to sort of hear things that weren't direct conversations you were involved with?
You couldn't hear. It was oddly eerily quiet, but the wind was so howling that I had a tough time actually hearing people. So you had to speak very loud or get next to each other.
And as far as your conversation with the defendant, Ms. Reed, what, if anything, did you ask her? What, if any, response did she give?
So I walked Ms. Reed to the back of 682. She was obviously cold. Got her in the back of the car, put the heat on, asked her, how did she end up here? How did her boyfriend end up here? She says, I don't know.
Prior to placing her in the back of the cruiser, how would you describe her sort of demeanor outside?
Confused, hysterical, shock.
What, if anything, was she saying or asking in regard to Mr. O'Keefe prior to you putting her in the back of the cruiser?
She was yelling out, is he dead?
And is that something she said once, more than once, or something?
Numerous times.
About how loudly was she saying?
Oh, she was yelling it.
And so once back in the cruiser, you asked her some questions after she said, I don't know. What, if anything, else did you ask her then?
I asked her if she had driven there, and she said, I think so. And then right after that, she said, I don't remember. Because of her state, I decided to stop questioning there. She couldn't keep her train of thought.
Now, you had notified Detective Sergeant Blank and Lieutenant Gallagher prior to your going to the scene, is that correct?
Yes.
About what time was it that either or both of them arrived?
Detective Sergeant Lank probably got there at about 6:20, 6:25. I immediately briefed him what we had, what was going on so far. And
and about what time did Lieutenant Gallagher arrive?
I believe Lieutenant Gallagher probably came in right around 7 a.m.
Now, following your conversation with the defendant, who, if anyone else, did you speak to once?
That I spoke to the other party, Miss Roberts.
If you know, about how long the period of conversation are we talking about with respect to Miss McCabe and Miss Roberts?
Each interview?
Yes.
A couple minutes.
And why was it only a couple minutes?
It was a pretty quick statement. It seemed like they were only in the car for a very short amount of time.
Move to strike.
All right, so we'll strike after it was a pretty quick statement. Next question.
Now, with regard to Ms. Reed, after you had that brief conversation with her in the back of your cruiser, where did you go from there? Where did she go from there?
I believe she, at some point, we let her back outside of the car. We never closed the door on her because I was stood in the door frame with my head in the back seat. She was got out. She kind of just did her own thing, paced up and back between talking to either Miss Roberts or Miss McCabe, yelling out.
And at some point, did the ambulance of Miss Officer O'Keefe was in, did that leave the scene?
It did.
And following following that, what, if anything, did you say or do with reference to the defendant, Miss Reed?
Once the Officer O'Keefe was transported, Miss Reed just was not listening to any directions. We were trying to keep her in Miss Roberts' car to stay warm. She's going back and forth. I finally told Miss Roberts, we have everybody's information. She's not needed here anymore. Go home, get warm. We'll reach out if we have to.
And shortly after, and at that point, did Miss Roberts take Miss Reed?
She did.
And what, if anything, happened next on scene with regard to Miss Reed?
It was moments later. I got a radio transmission from our officer at the working dispatch that Mr. Reed, her father, was on the phone with Miss Reed, and she was making suicidal threats to take her own life.
And based on that information that you received, what, if anything, did you do in regard to that?
Well, once our officer, Deva, who didn't even know that we had Miss Reed at the scene, she radioed to us to confirm that we have a Karen party on scene. I said we did. She explained that her father was frantic on the phone, and Miss Reed was giving stating that she wanted to end her life. And he, in quotes, said he wanted her to be in protective custody. So at that time, I knew that we'd be able to get a hold of her because I had all the information. I believe I just called Ms. Roberts' phone, told her to bring her back to the scene.
And about how long was it after you spoke to Ms. Roberts that they returned to the scene?
They couldn't have gotten very far, especially in the road conditions.
And based on those statements that were reported to you from the dispatch from Bennett's father, what, if anything, did you do with regard to Ms. Reed?
I told Officer Mullaney, who was on scene, most of our patrolmen have, it's called the Section 12 paperwork inside of all of our cruisers, just for that reason. I advised him to fill out the proper paperwork, and we were going to section Ms. Reed to the hospital for mental evaluation.
And what is the Section 12 from your perspective?
It's a tool for police officers when you come on scene with someone that's having either a mental breakdown, claiming that they want to hurt themselves, anything like that. We have the power as police officers to fill out the proper paperwork. We're not medical professionals. Let a doctor determine if she does need medical help. And if she doesn't want to go or him, that paperwork allows us to actually physically put her on a stretcher and send her to the hospital. Once she gets to the hospital, it's up to the doctors there to do their due diligence. And if they deem that she's not mentally unstable, then she's released. But at least it's off of us.
Now, the time that Ms. Reed returns to the scene, the fire department, being the ambulance and the engine, have already left. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
And then apparatus from the fire department come back in reference to the Section 12.
Correct. So another, I believe this group was from Station 2, which is the other fire station in town of Canton. They arrived on scene.
And during that time in between, who arrives first, the fire department or Ms. Roberts with Ms. Reed?
Ms. Roberts.
And during that time, after Ms. Roberts arrives with Ms. Reed and prior to the fire department arriving, what, if any, interaction did you have with Ms. Reed during that time?
None.
And then once the fire department returns on scene, what, if anything, do you direct them to with regard to Ms. Reed and with regard to the paperwork you had Officer Mullaney fill out?
Officer Mullaney and Officer Sarif, and looks like in the video, escort Ms. Reed to the ambulance, and she's safely transported to the hospital. Our officer back at dispatch called back Mr. Reed, advised her that his daughter was safe.
And then turning back to the scene, following Detective Sergeant Lang's arrival, where, if anywhere, did you and Detective Sergeant Lang go on scene following that?
So when we were waiting for the fire truck to arrive, we noticed that the lights went on at 34 Fairview. We needed, obviously, speak to the homeowners. I told Sergeant Lank at the time, I believe he was on the phone with CPAC for the state police. I said, the lights just went on the front door. Let's go speak to the homeowners. And we both walked in.
You actually physically walked into the house, is that correct?
Yes.
With respect to prior to you seeing sort of the house lights go on at 34 Fairview, had you seen anybody go into or out of that residence while you were there?
Yes. At some point, either myself or Sergeant Lank told Ms. McCabe that she needs to wake up the homeowners. We need to speak to them.
And why did you say that specifically to Ms. McCabe?
We have no idea why John O'Keefe is laying on the front lawn of a house. We have no idea. The statements from the three people, we need to figure out what happened last night, that night.
And so I guess my question is more, why Ms. McCabe versus somebody else?
Ms. McCabe is the sister-in-law of the homeowner, so she would be a friendly face to knock at the door at 6 o'clock in the morning in a blizzard.
Now, beyond anybody at 34 Fairview Road, again, before you observe those lights go on in residence, from the other houses sort of on the street up and down, who, if anyone, did you observe come out of any of those houses?
Nobody.
And was that something that you did about the time that you were on scene?
Correct.
So how long were you on scene for in total?
Looking at the log, we were there for almost exactly 2 hours.
So during those 2 hours, no one from any of the houses on the street came outside?
No. I mean, every emergency truck that showed up at 6 o'clock in the morning during a blizzard, there's no other cars on the road, so you're not coming down with sirens blaring, waking up an entire street, a neighborhood. There's no need for it. So it was just lights and flashing, and to be honest with you, you couldn't see very far.
So you and Detective Sergeant Lank go into the home at 34 Fairview, and who, if anyone, did you speak to in there?
Mr. Albert, Mrs. Albert, Brian, and Nicole.
And who, if anyone else, was present in the home when you spoke with them?
When I was in there, I know Jen was in there, but we didn't speak to her because we already spoke to her, but we just spoke to Brian and Nicole right in the front room.
Now, you heard over the course of the 911 call from Ms. McCabe that she references at 34 Fairview is the Albert residence, correct?
Yes.
And did you know Brian Albert, or were you aware of who he was prior to going to the house that day?
I know of Brian Albert, yes.
And how did you know
him? He's a brother of a coworker that I've worked with for 18 years.
And coworker that you worked with for 18 years, who's that?
Detective Albert.
What's his first name?
Kevin.
And had you ever been to that house before?
No.
You ever been inside that house before?
No.
And when you go inside that day, it's Brian Albert, Nicole Albert, and Mr. Cave, is that correct?
Yes.
And during the time that you were in there, do you recall seeing, or who, if anyone else, do you recall seeing in there besides those three people, yourself and Detective Sergeant?
Nobody. Detective Lang took the lead on speaking to Brian and Nicole Albert, and I kind of just moseyed in the front of the house, looked in the dining room, you know, and listened to what they said from what happened. You know, they seemed like they were generally in shock that there was a
objection.
Sustain. Next question, please.
What, if anything, did you observe about their demeanor when you spoke?
They looked like they just got woken up at 6 o'clock in the morning.
And as far as you're indicating that you're sort of looking or poking around the front area near the front door, correct?
Yes.
And what, if anything, of note did you observe inside the house when you did?
Nothing. Everything to be in order. It seemed like a normal house.
And following, if you know, about how long was that conversation in the house?
I would say 20, 25 minutes.
And following that conversation, where did you and Detective Sergeant Lang go?
At that time, we both left the residence, came outside, and at that time, Lieutenant Gallagher was arriving. We had like a little bit of a powwow, figured out what was going on, and I believe that's when we saw Jen McCabe's husband show up and walked in. And
Again, you didn't know Jennifer McCabe prior to that day, correct?
No.
Did you know her husband prior to that day? So after you saw her husband, who you now know to be your husband, walk in, what, if anything, did you do?
Sergeant Lang ran back inside to get a statement from Mr. McCabe as well.
Did you go with him as well?
I did not.
And after you have sort of the conversation between yourself, Detective Sergeant Lang, and Lieutenant Gallagher, what if anything did you, the three of you do from there?
Lieutenant Gallagher immediately said we need to seal off the area of the where Officer Keith was located. We grabbed some crime scene tape, put around. He wanted to photograph the area as well.
And who, if anyone, grabbed the crime scene tape?
Myself.
And what, if anything, did you do with it?
I wrapped it around by the flagpole, tree, and cruiser. It was hard to keep up just because the wind was blowing at such a good rate.
And then what, if anything, did you and the other officers do with respect to the area that was identified to you as where Mr. O'Keefe was on Officer Sarah's ride?
Lieutenant Gallagher noticed that the snow was coming down at such a good clip, we couldn't keep it clear, and made the idea of anybody have a leaf blower, and I did. So I told him I'm not too far away from the house, so I shot back to my residence and grabbed my own.
And about how long a period of time was it between the time that you sort of left to go get the leaf blower and the time that you arrived back?
No more than 5-7 minutes.
And once you arrived back at back in the area of 34 Fairview Road, what, if anything, happened there?
I started it up for Lieutenant Gallagher. He took it over, and it worked great.
Now, with respect to that sort of implementation of the leaf blower, what, if anything, did you or other officers do to sort of memorialize?
So as Lieutenant Gallagher was using the piece of equipment, I used my iPhone, videotaped it, and took two still photos.
Senator, may I approach?
Yes.
I actually don't need to approach. Ms. Gilman, if I could have exhibit number 33 up on the screen. Just the first one. Mm-hmm.
Sergeant Good, have you seen what's up on the screen as Exhibit 33 before?
Yes.
And what do you recognize as?
That's Lieutenant Gallagher.
And what, if anything, does Lieutenant Gallagher have in his hand at the time in this particular case?
The leaf blower.
And what's depicted on the screen, is that a fair and accurate portrayal of what you memorialized on scene that day with respect to the leaf blower?
Yes.
Ms. Gilman, if you could just run just this one video. With respect to using that leaf blower on scene, Sergeant, what, if anything, did you observe in the snow when that was used to blow away sort of the layer?
It exposed the blood and small drinking glass broken.
And do you see those items in what's frozen up on the screen right now?
I do.
If you could, using that laser point, direct the jury's attention to where you observed each of those items in this video.
So that's the glass right there, and then all the blood droplings.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Ms. Gilman. You can take over. Now, prior to using the leaf blower, what, if anything, did Lieutenant Gallagher instruct you and any other officers to do with regard to your cruisers that were parked on scene?
We needed to move them out of the way. He wanted to be able to get a good shot of the area, so we kind of closed off the road and...
And Ms. Gilman, if I could have Exhibit 41 back up again. Yeah, Ms. Gilman, if I could ask you to fast forward on this to about 40 minutes and 30 seconds into. Pause it right there. Now, Sergeant Good, what's up on the screen? Is that the point that you are referencing now as far as about to move your cruiser for that purpose?
This was earlier when we moved out of the way of the ambulance, I believe.
Fine.
Nope. Could be right.
Regardless, you recognize this to be...
Yes, sorry. If you just play forward, I'll know.
I'm sorry. Can you...
Just play forward, I guess.
Ms. Gilman, if you could, I'd like to play this through to about 41 minutes and 12 seconds or so. But if you could just pause it real quick, I'm sorry. Sergeant, at some point when you move this cruiser, what, if anything, are you able to see in this footage of the front lawn area of 34th Fairview?
So my cruiser camera pans the front yard of 34th Fairview, and it shows the snow undisturbed. No footprints, any tracks, anything like that leading anywhere.
And if you could just speak up when we get to that point, and Ms. Gilman, if you could just pause it on that. Right there. Now, the
area that you were speaking about before, is this sort of the portion of the video?
Yes.
And using the laser pointer, if you could direct the jury's attention to the portion of the yard that you were talking about in indication of no footprints or anything that you observed that scene.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Newman, if you could just let it run through for a couple of points. Thank you. And Ms. Gilman, you can take it down. Now, Sergeant Good, you had spoke about as well some photographs that were taken to memorialize the area of where Mr. O'Keefe was found. Is that correct?
Yes.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
Show you what's been marked as exhibit 8. That's first, just if you recognize.
Yes.
And what do you recognize that?
That is 34 Fairview.
And Ms. Gilman, if I could have exhibit 8 up on the screen. What's up on the screen, is that a fair and accurate portrayal of what you observed on scene that day?
Yes.
If I could ask you to flip forward in that book before you to exhibit number 10.
Okay.
And Ms. Gilman, if we could have exhibit 10. Ms. Sergeant, what's up on the screen, is that what you have before you with exhibit 10?
Yes.
And similarly, do you recognize that?
Yes.
And what do you recognize that?
That is a scene where our officers and the witnesses found Officer O'Keefe.
And if you could, using that laser pointer you have before you, direct the jury's attention to where you were directed to where Mr. O'Keefe was found.
Objection, hearsay.
No, I'll allow that.
Go ahead, sir. Now, sir, if I could ask you to flip forward in that book just a little bit more to what's been marked as Exhibit 20A.
Okay.
So then if I could have that exhibit on the screen as well. And do you recognize what's up on the screen as Exhibit 20A?
Yes, that's the curbing.
And as far as the curbing is concerned, how is it sort of cleared off in this particular area?
We had to kick it off with our shoe to clear it off so we could actually see it, make a mark of it.
And again, that area that you were directed to, as far as where Mr. O'Keefe was found, you observed that in this photograph, Exhibit 20A as well?
Yes.
You could, using the laser pointer before you, direct the jury's attention to where in this photograph that is. Now, may I approach this to
Yes.
And lastly, I'm just going to show you what's been marked as Exhibit 27. Sergeant, do you recognize that?
I do.
Ms. Gilman, if we could have 27 on the screen. And Sergeant Good, what's up on the screen as and before you as Exhibit 27? What's up on the screen, is that what you have before you as Exhibit 27?
Yes.
And if you could describe to the jury what we're looking at in this.
So we have the blood. And then right here is the broken drinking glass that was located.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
May I approach just to retreat?
Yes.
May I have just a moment, Your Honor?
Yes.
Following your time on scene that morning, sir, where did you go from there?
Once we cleared 34 Fairview, I returned to the Kent Police Department.
And the items that you were talking about as far as the blood, which you believe to be blood droplets in the snow and the piece of the cocktail glass, what, if anything, did you or other officers do with regard to that?
Overruled.
Go ahead.
Detective Sergeant Lank transported those back to the police department.
Again, just one moment, Sean.
Okay.
I have nothing further for this witness, Your Honor.
All right. Mr. Iannetti.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, Sergeant.
Afternoon.
Sir, you and I have never met, correct?
No.
We've never spoken?
No.
Sergeant Good, you grew up in Canton?
I did.
You attended Canton Public Schools?
I did.
You graduated from Canton High School?
I did.
That would have been in 1998?
Yes.
Is it true that in your graduating class was somebody named Courtney Proctor?
Yes.
You knew Courtney Proctor?
Yes.
You knew her to be Michael Proctor's sister, correct?
Yes.
Also in your graduating class was somebody named Joe Daniels, correct?
Yes.
You knew her, or you now know her, to be Christopher Albert's sister-in-law, correct?
Yes.
Christopher Albert is married to Jill Daniels' sister, correct?
Yes.
And you know Christopher Albert as Brian Albert's brother, correct?
Yes.
So it is fair to say that you graduated high school with Michael Proctor's sister and Christopher Albert's sister-in-law, correct?
Yes.
And, you know, growing up in Canton and you know, working for 18 years as a Canton police officer, you're well familiar with the Albert family of Canton, correct?
I work with one of them.
You know that the Albert family is a well-known family in Canton, correct?
Sure.
The Albert family is well-connected to the town of Canton, correct?
I don't know what you mean by connected. They live in Canton, yes.
All right, well, Christopher Albert is a Canton town selectman, is he not?
Yes.
And you've already established that Kevin Albert is a Canton police officer, correct?
Yes.
And you already testified that you knew Brian Albert as well, and you knew that he was a Boston police officer who lived in Canton, correct?
Yes.
In fact, he and his family lived at 34 Fairview in Canton, correct?
Yes.
You also knew that his family had been there for years, and before Brian Albert owned the house, his parents owned it, correct?
Yes.
Now, as of January 28th of 2022, who among the Albert family did you know either personally or professionally?
Professionally is Kevin Albert.
Okay, and what about personally?
I knew Chris.
And you know that Christopher Albert, in addition to being a town selectman, also owns a pizza place in Canton, correct?
Yes, he does.
What's the name of that pizza place?
That'd be D&E.
And have you eaten there before?
Yes.
You've seen Christopher Albert there before?
I have.
Now,
On January 29th of 2022, you learned at approximately 6 a.m. that John O'Keefe's body was found on Brian Albert's front lawn, correct?
Yes.
And as of January 29th of 2022, you knew that Brian Albert at that time, of course, was the brother of your fellow Canton police officer, Kevin Albert, correct?
Yes.
And how long have you known Kevin Albert for?
As long as I worked at the Canton Police Department.
And that is approximately 18 years?
Coming up in 18 years, yes.
And is Kevin Albert older or younger than you or around the same age?
He's older than me.
By how many years, if you know?
I don't.
Approximately?
5 years.
Okay. Have you ever shared a patrol car with Kevin Albert?
No.
Have you ever worked on an investigation or a case with Kevin Albert?
I probably have, yeah.
In addition to being a colleague, would you also consider Kevin Albert to be a friend?
Yeah, we've socially hung out after work.
And because he is a fellow Canton police officer, you'd expect that he would have your back in a crisis, correct?
Objection, Your Honor.
No, I'll let him have it.
I hope he would defend me while working. Yes, he's a police officer.
You would certainly protect him in a crisis, correct?
At work, when we're police officers, yes.
Sure. Well, even out of work, if he was in a crisis, you'd probably help, correct?
I don't know what you're asking.
Well, there is a teamwork that is part and parcel of being a police officer with your fellow officers, correct?
Sure.
It's a dangerous job.
Sure.
You need to have each other's back.
Sure.
You need to depend on your fellow officers, correct?
Sure.
And it's been said there's a brotherhood among police officers, correct?
To a fact.
And, you know, when you meet another police officer, he or she will tell you that they're, quote, on the job, correct?
Objection, Your Honor.
The objection sustained.
And in terms of, you know, depending on your fellow officers, you're taught all this beginning in the police academy, correct?
Objection.
No, he can have that.
What am I taught?
Well, I'm asking you. With regard to the you know, the teamwork and, you know, having each other's backs and, you know, working together and depending on each other, you're taught that starting in...
Sure.
And it's reinforced over the years by superior officers and your colleagues, correct?
Sure.
Now, you were assigned as the primary investigator in the reconstruction analysis for this case, correct?
Assigned as the what?
You were assigned as the primary investigator in the reconstruction analysis for this case.
I don't know reconstruction analysis. No, I was the patrol supervisor that day.
Let me just have a moment, Ron.
Okay.
May I approach?
Yes.
I'm going to show him the whole thing. I'll direct him to page 5. Do that line. Now, I'm going to show you what is, not sure how many pages, but there are quite a few.
Okay.
It's a...
Your Honor, if he could not describe what he's showing to the witness and
yeah,
just show
go
it
ahead
to
and show it to him.
Sure. I'm going to direct you, I'm taking out the first 4 pages and directing just the 5th page.
Okay.
And specifically the 2nd paragraph, and it's numbered number 2.
Okay.
And I will ask you if you've seen that before.
Okay.
And I'll take it back from you.
Okay.
I may Thank you. Do you recognize what this is?
Looks like some state police form.
Okay. Is it a...
Why don't you not ask him? He just answered what he thought it was.
Are you familiar with a collision analysis and reconstruction section, a CARS report?
I know the state police has a CARS section that handles motor vehicle homicide.
Does this appear to be a CARS report?
I've never seen one. You just showed me one. I'm not in the state police.
But you did see that your name is listed in the paragraph that I pointed out to you?
Sure.
And you're listed as Sergeant Sean Good, that's you, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Of the Canton Police, who are assigned as the primary investigator in this reconstruction.
Because I wrote the offense report from that day?
Well, I'm just asking you. I'm dealing with a state police report that lists you as the primary investigator with regard to the reconstruction.
Objection, Your Honor. May we approach?
Sustained. Sure, why don't you all come up for a minute. Bring that, please.
More raw courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed is coming up from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Press subscribe so you don't miss a minute.